Welcome to the Bringing Intimacy Back Show, where intimacy is real. If you desire to intimately connect with yourself, your significant other, children, family, friends, community, and your higher power, this show is for you. Thus, we explore intimate topics, inspiring life stories, spirituality, and insightful tips on strengthening relationships. This show is hosted by Dr. April and her co-host, Dr. Kelly. Now let's get this episode of the Bringing Intimacy Back Show started, because we share with you the secret power to intimacy to create a life you love, or love the life you create. Now here's your host, Dr. April, and co-host, Dr. Kelly.
Welcome to the Bringing Intimacy Back Show, where intimacy is real. Welcome today. Yes, and I want to let you guys know that Dr. Kelly, she's so sorry that she can't be here, but she's doing her special work where she specializes in helping Native Americans and the struggles they have. And she also covered a lot for me last week. If you notice, I didn't talk much because I was a little sick. But she'll be back with us next week. So as we start off today's show, I want to let you guys know it's a topic that many couples ask me about, something that I deal with. As you guys know, I deal a lot with intimacy. And so what many times people ask in the sense of couples is sometimes it's something when they feel like their partner is struggling with a variety of stuff. Sometimes people ask, and even individuals, when it comes to sex, can sex addiction actually be a problem? And of course it is. And it is also an intimacy problem. So today's topic is sexual addiction is an intimacy problem. I have a fantastic guest that I'm going to talk to you about that's going to come on and give us a lot of information. But before I get started, I want to let my audience know that, you know, I'm about to release my second ebook, which I'm so excited about. As you know, the first one is Improving Intimacy, Self, Spirit, and Spouse, and it's on Amazon, which is great. And so now I have another ebook, because as we go, we're going to go deeper and deeper. Then this one is about self-intimacy. It's about you. So please check those things out. As now, we're in July 1st, and as you know, every month, we focus on a charity. And the charity that we're focusing on this month, it's called the American Art Therapy. And they heal people through art. I love art. And so definitely go ahead and check them out. They have access to a variety of art therapists. They provide education for people going into art therapy, but also therapy services for people who are struggling. So visit members.arttherapy.org/donate now. All right, let me talk to you about our presenter today, our guest. Welcome, Matthew Winger. Welcome, Matthew.
Hey, well, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you. So Matthew specializes in addiction to pornography and sexual behavior. He's worked with, of course, non-Christians and Christians, because it's, we're all in of all faith and practices. He's actually the clinical director at a sexual addiction treatment center, and it's called Begin Again Institute.
Yeah.
And the great thing about them is they are working on introducing and utilizing a new focus called trauma-induced sex addiction. Hmm. Welcome, Matthew.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes. So the first thing that we really talk about on this show, because it's called Bringing Intimacy Back, sure, is intimacy. So as I get to know you and we talk about it, what is your definition of intimacy?
Yeah, we say that intimacy is vulnerability plus authenticity, which is the definition that most of our clients, which are men, really struggle with, both being vulnerable about their own emotions and their own fears, even their needs, and then authenticity of the ability to be yourself in the present, in that moment. And we believe that vulnerability plus authenticity brings emotional intimacy.
Oh, definitely. Yes. That terminology, the main one that we're talking about today is sexual addiction. Mm-hmm. And many times individuals have no, they're like, do I have a sexual addiction? Do I not? What is your definition of that as we get started?
Sure. So there's obviously a lot of definitions out there of sexual addiction. I like to keep it simple. So if you're struggling with sex or sexual behavior, such as pornography or compulsive masturbation or something like that, there are kind of three things to look for, right? So is there compulsivity? So do I feel like I need to do it? Or do I find myself wanting to do it in circumstances where I otherwise wouldn't? Or am I going out of my way to do it when I otherwise wouldn't, right? So do I have a level of compulsivity where I feel like I need to? The second piece is it escalating in my life? Do I feel like I need to do more get the same result? So what I used to spend 30 minutes doing this, now I'm spending 3 hours. I used to be like once a week thing. Now it's many days a week or every day or multiple times a day, right? So is it escalating? And then the third piece is it continuing in spite of felt consequence? So I'm starting to perceive that there are some negative effects to my compulsive and escalating sexual behaviors. But despite those consequences, I don't or I can't stop. So those three areas are ones to kind of hone in on and see, well, is this actually maybe an addiction for me or someone close to me?
Okay. And just to clarify in that, starting with your first one of being compulsive, you said it's need versus want.
Yeah.
So if you want to do it, is it an addiction versus you need to do it? Or if you need to do it, it's an addiction versus you want to do it.
Sure. And it's kind of a both and, right? So we believe that sex addiction arises to regulate an unregulated nervous system, right? The stress, anxiety, fear, fight or flight, or freeze, right? Those kind of survival responses. In order to regulate those responses, sexual addiction has arisen in people to help them cope with those extreme responses those traumatic responses, which I'm sure we'll talk about. I forgot your question. Just give it to me one more time.
That's okay. Is the need versus want?
Right. Okay. So all of those regulatory type behaviors, and regulatory behaviors can be almost anything, like eating pizza or going on a bike ride or whatever. But regulatory behaviors are things that help us get back to level. And all addictions originally started out as regulatory behaviors, things that we just did to try to feel safe, to try to just feel okay. But it's an addiction where when it becomes something that I need, now it moved from a want into a need. So the behavior used to be something that I wanted to do. Now I need to do it to feel safe, to feel normal, to feel level.
Right. Which is a great thing for people to understand, because sometimes people don't understand how a natural function can be an addiction, you know,
just
eating and all that kind of stuff. Yes.
Sure. And I think there's all sorts of misconceptions around sexual addiction where, what's wrong with sex? You know, right. I mean, it's something that people should do it and they should do a lot of it if they want to. And why not, you know? Right. But that's really not what we're dealing with.
Okay. I know you mentioned in your answers a few times the word we. So can you explain to our audience the we? Who do you represent so they can?
Sure. I do that a lot, don't I? The we represents Begin Again Institute in our Christian program that we have underneath Begin Again Institute Boulder Recovery. Like you said, I'm the clinical director, so I run the program and supervise all the therapists. We were founded by Dr. Michael Barta, the author of TINSA. Mm-hmm. And so when I say we, I say us as a treatment program, as an organization. This is how we engage with sexual addiction. So
Okay. On your second part of the definition, you talked about it's escalating.
Yeah.
You know, the behaviors escalate. Yes. And so what exactly does that mean in the sense of I'm watching porn now, you know, 5 minutes on a weekend versus now every day and at work and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Escalation just really means I have to do more of the behavior to get the desired chemical response, emotional response that I'm looking for. One of the misconceptions of sexual addiction is that people think that sex addicts are addicted to the act of ejaculation or sex. Right. But the reality is they're addicted to dopamine, the dopamine release within the brain. So the pleasure chemical, if you want to call it that. And those behaviors early on in their childhood development, they realized that those behaviors could bring that pleasure chemical and it could calm them down. It could bring them peace, could bring them felt safety, could bring them a release of emotion. And it was working for them. Now it's no longer working for them. It's escalated to the point where I need to do this all of the time to get that same, essentially, a hit. And an easy metaphor for this is drug addiction. Right. You have to use more and more and higher concentration of substance to get the same effect. And it works the exact same way.
Yeah, yeah. I was just thinking to myself, it'd be interesting if the DSM-5, which is what we use as clinicians, had it as addiction to dopamine, would more people come out and be honest with their addiction versus... Mm. You know, saying I'm addicted to drugs, I'm addicted to sex, which is like even, you know, people don't want to admit.
Right. Yeah. There's a stigma there, unfortunately. And, you know, there are a lot of bad actors out there that have utilized sex addiction as a way out from under responsibility for their behaviors, high profile people, in our culture. And so sex addiction has in some ways accidentally become kind of a joke, but there are millions of people, men and women, that struggle with this across our world have to utilize tremendous courage to go and get help around it because of that stigma. You know, I often say you stand up in a room of people and you say you're, 6 months sober from alcohol, you're going to get a round of applause. Right. You stand up and say you're 6 months sober from sex addiction,
everybody's going to move from you. I'm like, yeah. That's the sad part of it. Yes. Mm-hmm. And in the third part of your definition, you talked about consequences, that you felt, and you use the word felt consequences.
Yeah.
Why is the word felt in there?
Well, I think there are consequences that are going on in people's lives around addiction that they don't really feel right away. Right? The distance from their family, the numbness that they have to their emotions, the lack of emotional intimacy in their relationships, in their marriages, their inability to do their best work in their career. Some of these things they don't realize when they're in the middle of addiction, but a felt consequence is when it arises to the level of my awareness and it's a big deal. Like my wife coming to me and saying, what's this? Right. What's this on your phone? You got it right. And get out. I don't want to look at you. I don't want to talk to you. You said you were done with this. Get your things, move out. Or, an affair again, I thought we worked through this. I thought we went to counseling, getting caught at work, getting caught with stuff on your computer at work and losing maybe a promotion or an opportunity at work, or maybe even losing your job. These are felt consequences. And when these come into our lives, and we still can't change, even though we might want to, we still can't change the behavior, then we know that we're dealing with something very serious.
I was just speaking with one of my interns actually today, and he was seeing a woman whose husband has been on a lot of porn sites, just hooking up with a lot of different people and all that kind of stuff. And so, and she's just really about to leave, but he doesn't seem to care, or he's not in the sense of a consequence.
Sure.
And of course, there's alcohol involved in all of this. So does that mean that if he doesn't feel it, the consequence, does it mean that it's not an addiction or?
No. I think determining whether you or somebody has a felt consequence is hard. You know, it's hard to do for somebody else, but for them, it's like, hey, your wife is coming to you. She's threatening to leave you, and you don't want to change. Then, you know, from her point of view, yeah, this guy likely has some sort of sex addiction.
Right.
Other people might say, hey, he's just not kind of he's not a one woman kind of guy. But if you were to really sit down with that guy and say, hey, is this really what you want?
Right.
You know, they might say no,
right.
You know, if they're being really honest with themselves. But, you know, the best time to deal with an addiction is when you're ready to change. And some people just aren't ready to either admit they have an addiction, period, or they're not done. We work with guys sometimes who only get one toe into recovery and say, hey, there's still some stuff out there I want to try. There's still some crazy out there I want to try. And I'm not done with this yet. And other guys just kind of lower their head and rub their face and be like, man, you're going to be me. And, you know, they're maybe 20 years older and they say, do you want to be back here in this kind of program 20 years from now? Mm-hmm. This is your chance, man. And unfortunately that happens from time to time.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. Well, we're going to take a small break. And when we come back, we're going to go more into about addiction and treatment and how we can help individuals and couples out there who are struggling with this issue. We'll be back in a moment.
Are you wanting a vacation in paradise? A vacation to rekindle the passion? A vacation without the kids? A vacation where you can learn how to communicate, where you and your partner actually hear each other and gain insight? If so, vacation counseling is your next vacation. Dr. April Brown has created Vacation Counseling in Southwest Florida as a perfect option for you and your partner. Our retreats are one couple at a time. We have a variety of packages available to choose from, including virtual couples retreats. If you and your partner are interested in the vacation counseling, please visit us at vacationcounseling.com for more information on pricing and packages. Also, follow us on Instagram and Facebook to keep track of the latest news, stories, activities, or coupons on vacation counseling and Dr. April's other services. We encourage you to sign up to receive a monthly newsletter called Intimate Connections at drAprilBrown.com. Remember, if you and your partner are struggling with communication and intimacy, and you all are looking for a retreat to connect, vacation counseling can be your next vacation in Southwest Florida.
Welcome back to the Bringing Intimacy Show, where intimacy is real. Well, today our topic is sexual addiction as an intimacy problem. And we have Matthew Winner here to sit here and talk to us about this. And so, Matt, before we go into the treatment, I know sometimes when people are thinking their spouse is realizing they have a sexual addiction problem, sometimes the thing is that, like, what kind of trauma, what happened to me to cause this, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Does it always have to be a trauma or mm-hmm. what's your thoughts, sir?
Yeah. So, we believe that trauma, is at the root of almost all addiction. And specifically sexual addiction, we believe that, trauma and specifically attachment trauma mm-hmm. is at the root of this addiction, right? Where a child was reaching out to get their needs met and they were either abused or dismissed in response, right? They were verbally or psychologically, spiritually, emotionally, physically, sexually abused, or they were, their caregivers had their back to them and they were trying to do whatever they could to get them to turn around, and pay attention to them emotionally. And you would think in a trauma-based program, most of our guys are coming from environments where they were physically abused or there was some sort of sexual trauma. And that's true. We do see a lot of guys that are like that. And I believe there are a lot of sex addicts out there that have endured that kind of trauma, what we might call big T trauma, right? Mm-hmm. But actually like 85% or more of sex addicts that have been surveyed across our country, and most of the men that come to our program actually are more in that little T trauma of My emotions were not validated at home. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a warm connection to my caregivers. They were present, but nobody seemed like they were paying attention to my emotions or my needs or validating me as a person other than the things that I could do. I was valued for what I could do, how I could perform, but not for who I was. And all sorts of instances like that. A simple way of looking at it, just really simple, is kind of what we call hot box and cold box. Hot box is kid reaches out and gets abused by the parent in some form or fashion, or they're getting abused and the parent doesn't pay attention. The cold box is kid is reaching out to connect with the parent and the parent is distracted and has their emotional gaze away from the child. So that can be a drug addiction, you know, their own addictions, their own marriage problems, finances, whatever it is, it's pulling the gaze of the parent away from the child. In both scenarios, that kid has to kind of figure out for himself or herself, how do I deal with my environment? How do I understand who I am? And they walk away with messages like, I must be bad. There's something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. Or I don't matter, or okay, I'm not valuable. And those messages are at the root of most sexual addiction. So you take that brokenness, right? And then you couple that with an early introduction to maybe a maladaptive sexual behavior, mm-hmm, where the kid goes, oh, wow, this feels good. This kind of feels safe. This feels good for me. You kind of wind those together. And that's kind of the root of a sexual addiction, where I have to take care of myself. And, oh, look, here's this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, like you said, and with sexual addiction, it's so much focusing on self. Mm-hmm. How does it relate when it comes to I'm connecting with a significant other or my wife, my husband?
Yeah. Well, because those messages that were developed, or those little scripts, like that I have to take care of myself, I guess I have to take care of myself, I guess I have to figure this out. Right. Because I lived in that box, right? I lived in this little mold. I lived in this little blueprint of how relationships are supposed to work for me. This is how I understand relationships. I understand relationships as I reach out for help and support and I get abused and rejected and I get treated badly, or I reach out for help and support and I get dismissed and invalidated. If that's all I knew growing up and I had to take care of myself, then accidentally I'm going to, you know, think that my romantic relationship is going to operate the same way. Right. And either I look for relationships that mirror those dysfunctions, or I impress those dysfunctions on my relationships. Because I think, and you probably encounter this all the time, that subconsciously, I think the brain thinks if I can get a second shot at this, I can do it better. And mm-hmm. So I accidentally replicate my own dysfunctional childhood environment in my romantic relationships. And then what happens, right? I can't be intimate with this other person because they don't feel safe to me.
Right.
Because I'm seeing them through the lens of my childhood. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So before we get into the treatment part, as people are listening and there may be a person out there, they're like, well, I'm struggling. I'm watching tons of porn, or I'm visiting strip clubs and I'm spending, you know, a lot of excess money, yeah, whatever the case may be, or on sites and spending a lot of excess money. How can they begin to talk to their partner about what's going on?
Mm, that's super hard, right? If I'm realizing that I'm starting to have a compulsive addiction, usually the impulse is to hide it. The impulse is going to be to keep it under wraps, because what happens if they find out? And then this is the deep seated fear of the people who struggle with sex addiction, because it comes from that attachment trauma, right?
Right.
And the fear is, if they really knew me, they would reject me.
Leave me. Yes.
Yes. So there is almost no way that they are going to volunteer that information. What I'm going to do, and I've worked with so many guys that have, they're just going to try to manage it. They're mm-hmm. just going to try to white knuckle it. They're just going to try to, like, I'm right. going to stop. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it today. I haven't done it for 3 days. Woo. But eventually, because I haven't dealt with the trauma at the root of it, it comes back around.
Back up. Yeah. People are also afraid of losing their kids.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, especially if you're a man. Sorry about that. But yeah.
There's so many consequences, right? And there's all these little boogeymen all over. Right. But what guys don't realize is that admitting, and men and women both struggling with this addiction, they don't realize that admitting that this addiction is present in their life is not the consequence. It is the opportunity to get better and to heal. And so many people have told me that getting discovered was a consequence of their behavior. And I say, no, it's not. That is the opportunity for you to start the healing process. It's not a consequence. That, mm-hmm. You know, go for it. So, I think some people within this addiction are brave enough to go to their partners and say, I really need help. I'm really struggling with this. And that's crushing to their mm-hmm. partners. It really is, because it feels like such a deep betrayal, some of these behaviors.
Right. So from a partner standpoint of view, if someone comes and says that, like you said, maybe they should look at it as an opportunity, which is hard when you're a victim.
Yeah. So I think the opportunity end is more for the addict, right? Of like, I want to get out from under this. I want to get better. I want to be a better husband or a partner.
Right.
Spouse. I want to live a life, a real life, you know. For the partner, there's really no words to describe the devastation of these behaviors. And most of the time, what I hear is it's the lying. There's been so much lying and they don't really know what their reality has been. As long as this addiction has been going on, it's like there's been another person in their relationship that they weren't aware of. And so they're going to immediately start to try to figure out what their reality was. Wait, so were you acting out when we were on that trip? Were you hooking up with people when we were over here doing this? Or what about this time that you were gone for 3 days on a business trip? And so they're going to try to piece their reality together.
Many times they become an investigator. They just look. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And guys will come and they'll complain during our treatment, and they'll say, oh, she's gone off the rails. She's just seeing ghosts everywhere. And no, she's searching for safety. She's searching for her reality, and she deserves to have that.
Right.
But, yeah, it's PTSD really at mm-hmm. the core, and we call it betrayal trauma. And when you look at brain scans of people that have endured betrayal trauma, they're very similar to wartime veterans. Mm-hmm. It's emotional bombs rather than literal bombs, but the effect on the brain is very, very similar.
Right. So if as a partner, you find something and you think, you know, my partner's doing a lot of stuff. How do you approach them?
I don't know if there's a right way to do this, because it's so overwhelming in that moment when that first discovery happens that if you come to them in anger and in hurt and even in rage, like who's going to tell you that you shouldn't respond that way? But what I would say to those partners that are in those initial stages of discovery of the addiction is that this isn't about you. This is something that predated your relationship with this person. Mm-hmm. And it has more to do with where they are at and their trauma and their own psychology. It's not because you're not good enough. It's not because you're not beautiful. It's not because you don't have sex enough. It's not because you gain weight because you had kids. It's not, you didn't cause it. And unfortunately, you're not going to be able to fix it. People suffering from this addiction need help. And
definitely. And that's good that you just put it there, that the partner cannot fix it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes that, you know, they get more lingerie, try to find out, you know, different ways to try to do their best, make themselves, you know, more available. So as we move on to this next part of, is it fixable?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
And that's the good news. Because what we're dealing with is not something that causes permanent damage. There's a part of all of us that predates our trauma.
Okay.
And we can find that person. when we can get to know that person and we can find out who we were before we started pretending, before we started performing, before we started thinking that we weren't enough and using sexual behaviors to try to feel the emotions that we wanted to feel and not feel the emotions that we didn't want to feel. There's a person that predated all of that.
Right, exactly.
And you're not permanently damaged because you weren't always like this. And no kid, 6-7 year old kid wanted to grow up and be a sex addict. They don't, that's not right. who you are. That's not who you are. These are things that you do. They are not who you are. And when we can get in and deal with the traumatic roots of why I seek safety within these behaviors, and we can alleviate the pressure around those traumas, guys can find, and men and women can find tons of success mm-hmm. in recovery. But just like alcohol, just like drug addiction,
right.
this is a lifelong commitment to recovery. But you can live a deep, rich, fulfilling life. And it is so possible for everyone who is mm-hmm. seeking it.
Okay. So I know I hear from some people that I don't remember my childhood. So how am I going to be able to fix this when, you know, I don't even remember.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. When all this got started, I just don't remember it.
Yeah. And there's kind of two things going on there. And one is a little bit more therapy woo than the other. So I'll start with the therapy woo-woo one, and we'll move yes. towards the more grounded one. So the therapy woo-woo version is, hey, there's a part of you that was traumatized, that was hurt, yep. that was in a traumatic situation. And that was overwhelming. So my within my psyche, so to speak, I've cut off that part of me because that part is holding all of that pain and hurt. So, okay. and I've been doing that for a really, really long time. So that little part, that little kid part of me that was traumatized, I don't really know that person.
Right.
I've got them kind of shut up in mm-hmm. a closet or something over there. And so it feels like I have no memories from that time, but I have just been reflexively shoving that kid in the closet. But if through help and guidance, like I can go and unlock that door mm-hmm. and talk to that kid. And I've seen over and over again clients who said that very same thing. And we find all sorts of memories down there, like, you know, mountains of memories. Once right. we create the safety and dig in the right places of because what's happening there is I'm partially blaming myself for my trauma. So I don't even like that kid.
Go that way. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even like that little guy because he was a part of that. He didn't run. He didn't fight. He didn't, you know, whatever right. he wasn't right. good enough or whatever it is. And I'm taking on the role of my traumatizers, you know, when I do that. So once we lower the volume of all that stuff and allow that kid to kind of come back and speak to us and teach us about what had happened back then. I know this all yeah. sounds very like existential, but.
But no, but that makes sense. Cause a lot of times I hear clients say that, if they remember a little bit, I should have said no to the person, you know, I should have told someone yeah. And I'm like, you're 6, you're 5.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, yeah. what are you going to bring a little kid in here and you're going to start judging him for all of right. his mistakes? Or right. would you be overwhelmed with compassion for that poor kid and what he's right. been through?
Right. Helping them to look at it at the eyes of how they were at that age.
Sure. And the other one is a lot of people don't see the painful events in their past as traumatic. And they That's need true. Some kind of coaching around that of saying, hey, if that happened to one of your children,
right. or
how would you feel about that?
Right. Exactly.
And they've been involved in minimization and they need right. The permission to right. feel what they feel about those mm-hmm. things.
Yeah, because many times, whether it's, you know, a parent that did it, step-parent, uncle, whatever, they don't want to think bad of that person.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah, I was working with someone recently, yeah. And the person was actually supposed to come to their wedding. And when we started, talking about all this, they're like, whoa. But yeah, they didn't want to, because they don't want to cause drama.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? If I start to deal with this, this is going to cause a lot of drama.
Yeah.
Yes. And
yeah.
in their mind and family and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. 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 So let me just push it aside.
Sure. And it's so easy as a third party to say, hey, you know, a lot easier than actually doing the work is saying, Right. Hey, do you know all the chaos and drama that is going on because you're not dealing with it?
Exactly.
Wouldn't it be, you know, all of your best efforts have brought you to this place. Maybe try something new and see if you can find healing in that relationship instead of continually trying to shove down how you feel about it. And it's creating all this like toxicity that's just under the surface. That's not helping you at your wedding.
Right. You know? Definitely. Yeah. So what does treatment actually look like?
Sure.
Yes.
Big question, right? Because there's a lots of different types of treatments that we use. And there are a lot of different types of treatments that are effective for this addiction. But one of my favorites is something called brain spotting.
Okay.
So I don't know if you've heard of brain spotting, but it's kind of, I wouldn't say new, but it's kind of, it's new to some. So it's a cousin of EMDR. Mm-hmm. So if you're familiar with EMDR, it's a way in which you can access memories that are stored in the midbrain, which is where we store a lot of our memories, especially painful ones.
Right. Some of our unconscious memories.
Yeah. And even pre-verbal memories too. So we use brain spotting, which is a way of utilizing eye position to access memories within the midbrain and reprocess them. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit faster than EMDR in the sense that you don't have to set up all of the manualization of EMDR. So it works for us because we have a short window with our clients. And then, but it's also effective in long-term therapy as well.
Okay.
But it's kind of intuitively true because I'm sure you've seen this in counseling where somebody's talking about maybe a shameful memory and their eyes are glued to the floor.
Right.
Or, you know, a memory of abuse and they kind of look up like this, right? In a stance of like helplessness or defense. Mm-hmm. Right. And the brain is storing memories and it's holding that kind of eye position. And most of the trauma treatments that we've discovered within the field and within the scientific community, they feel really weird, but they work. Mm-hmm. And EMDR is the same way. Who knew that, you know, looking from left to right over and over again while you're thinking about your trauma could help you deal with it. So it's just one of those techniques that we use to get into the midbrain and allow people to reprocess those memories, to relive those memories with a safer emotional outcome, with a more mature brain. And it's very supportive. It's very organic and you can mm-hmm. use different techniques within a brain spotting session, like, empty chair work or talking with the younger parts of yourself or things like that. So we believe that the body wants to heal and you put mm-hmm. the body in the right space and it will take advantage of it. And brain spotting is one of those ways. Another way that we treat this addiction is in community. So sex addiction is by its nature isolating.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't, no one else knows about this and I'm doing a lot of it by myself anyway. And, I feel cut off. I feel weird. I feel maybe, ugly within it. And, it's very isolating. So bringing, groups of addicts together in a cohort and working through the material together, I get to fight that lie. If you knew me, you would reject me. Right. And I get to develop empathy skills and emotional awareness skills within that group and build that connection. And we're really proud of our treatment model because guys will stay connected and mm-hmm. they'll stay connected for years and they'll go on vacations together and their wives will meet and they'll travel to visit each other and they'll have text chains and Zoom calls that they all jump on, you know, in the cohort. It's a tight cohort because you've told those people things that you thought you were going to take to the grave and they didn't reject you. So it's a very big part of the treatment. So we do different types of experiential and all sorts of different treatments.
Okay. Yeah. I'm glad that you mentioned the brain spotting for our audience to realize that of course we have an unconscious mind mm-hmm. that holds a lot of stuff. And even in the sense that our body remembers everything also, as the body keeps score. So using therapies that tap into that. And then the other part of that group effort is phenomenal because so sometimes couples are thinking, well, maybe if I put an app on my phone to stop me from doing X, Y, or Z, And then my partner checks it.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, there's so much going on there. Like we, man, within that addiction, we want to make the people closest to us the you know, policemen of the addiction, you know, the prison guard or whatever else. And it, we just can't do that. It's so triggering for them to check those emails every day and to see, you know, the update from whatever software that's ends up in their inbox every morning. And you know, what I tell partners is your vigilance did not protect them from continuing to act out, and it won't moving forward either. They need to want it for themselves. And apps are great, but most guys, if they're serious enough in their addiction, know how to get around that stuff. And it's only buys them a few minutes, maybe a few seconds to, do I really want to do this? And most of the time, if they're really triggered, they're going to do it regardless of if there's an app in the way or not. But what a community support within an addiction brings a whole nother element in that I'm on this journey together. I have a sponsor, I have a meeting, and I have a space where I can go and talk about things that have been triggering to me. I have a space where I can be open about what I'm struggling with, and I'm not looping my partner into the daily struggle where she or he has to feel unsafe all of the time, whether I'm acting out or not. Now what we say is, you need to tell your partner within 24 hours about a lie or a relapse. But other than that, you know, try to find those accountability relationships outside of your relationship, because she's not responsible. She's not your mom. He's not your dad to keep you in line around this addiction. They're your partner. They're your spouse. And that's a different relationship, and pursue that. And in that intimacy in a different way. You don't want that person being your parole officer of your addiction. And at the core, they don't want to be that either.
Right, right. Because it re-traumatizes them, as every you time. Said. Yes, yeah. Definitely. Well, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some more about treatment and also how treatment is from a Christian perspective or faith-based perspective. We'll be back in a few moments.
If you are listening to this commercial, you have a pulse. If you have a pulse, you have stress. You may need a therapist. How do you find a therapist? Oh, you go to your phone book. Wait, what's that? Go to the World Wide Web, you type in therapist near me. And then you find a list of acronyms. LMHC, LPC, NCC. How on earth do I understand this and navigate this? Go to drkellyboucher.com. Dr. Kelly specializes in helping people that struggle with anxiety, stress, burnout, grief, depression, compassion fatigue, sleep issues, body image issues. You can have help today. DrKellyBoucher.com.
Welcome back to the Bringing Intimacy Show, where intimacy is real. So today we've been talking about sex addiction and how it is an intimacy problem, dealing especially with couples and even an intimacy problem with oneself. Mm-hmm. And I have Matthew Winger here to sit and talk about this. And so we've been talking about self and spouse or partner. And now I know that he does a lot with faith-based individuals and in a faith-based, I think it's a faith-based program or it's an open.
So our Begin Again Institute program is a clinical-based program, and Boulder Recovery is a Christian program where we engage with Christian men who see their Christian faith as a core piece of their identity and want to engage in healing and recovery through their experience and relationship with God in concert with solid clinical work.
Okay. We have a question from the audience, from a male who is kind of asking basically about that. They feel like, and I'm just summarizing the question here, but they feel like if they come out, especially in their faith and they're from a Christian background, that they're never going to be forgiven, or it's just, you know, it's one of those sins that you shouldn't, you know, touch. And how in the world, do you get any kind of healing or from the stuff that they've been doing?
Yeah, I really feel like so much of that issue, and I mean, I really have a lot of sadness in my heart for that guy, and feeling like he can't tell the truth to anybody in his life or be authentic in the places that he wants to be. And, you know, I would tell him and I would tell other guys, you know, God sees you for all of who you are. And he is not standing there tapping his foot, waiting for you to get it together. In fact, he loves you and has compassion for you and desires healing for you. But more than that, he's in this with you, and he is faithful to you regardless of whether or not you ever overcome this addiction. So a lot of Christian guys think God is going to love me if, God will love me if, Jesus will like me if I can only get on top of this addiction. And the reality is that's just not true. Right. He has so much love and compassion for you in this. And
he sees everything, you know, because you talked about the trauma that most people have. He saw the little boy.
Yes. And he was there. He was there too. And that's so hard. And that's so hard to work through with these guys, that Jesus isn't just with you in the times where you feel his presence. He's always been with you, even in the hard times, even in the mistakes, even in the choices that you're ashamed of. He was there, and he doesn't feel differently about you. And what I'd say to that guy is, like, there are people within your life and in your community that will not reflect the gospel to you when you admit that you're struggling with this addiction. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't change the way that God feels about you. And that doesn't preclude the ability for you to get help. When we work with Christian men, and this is my passion, is to encourage them towards a deeper understanding of the gospel, because Christian guys think that Jesus' love is for everybody but them. Mm-hmm. And that's just not true. And they have theological beliefs that aren't connecting with their life experientially. And so we want to help them around that. But look, there is no greater example of the gospel than when somebody can pursue Jesus within this addiction and find hope and healing. That is the gospel, right? To open the eyes of the blind and to set the captives free. And
right. And look at what happened with Paul.
Yes. And so there are going to be people that are not going to be comfortable with you struggling with this addiction and speaking about it to them. And there's going to be people in your life that are going to have a hard time with it. But the people that truly love you and that are reflections of Jesus in your life are going to want you to find healing in around this issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And to touch a little bit on that, as we mentioned earlier, there are people who are trying to get help and they feel like they're being judged by society.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
You know, I say this to guys, you know, you need to find some trusted people. You need to find some safe people in your life for you to be able to talk to about this. Okay. And right now, culturally, it is not a safe thing for you to talk about this openly, unfortunately. And we're moving in that direction in the therapeutic community where it's a more recognized addiction. But in our culture broadly, especially Christian culture, this is, you're going to lose your job on the church board. You're going to not be able to serve in the children's ministry because of the misconceptions that sexual addiction means that you're just going to act out on everything that moves. And that's just not true. And so I say, find some trusted people in your life. Maybe it's just a sponsor, maybe your 12-step group, whatever it is. And be your authentic self in that space and in every space that you really can safely. But man, printing a t-shirt off and that says, you know, I struggle with sex and porn addiction is not a good idea.
Right. And like you said, people do lose things. Another question, which I get a lot from Samantha, who's in New Mexico. She's saying she's seen her husband watching porn a lot. And she's wondering, it's porn addiction, sex addiction.
We treat porn and sex addiction. And when what I tend to say is that when we get down to the nitty gritty, what we're dealing, and this is the topic of your show, this is an intimacy disorder, and it shows up in sexual behaviors, like acting out outside your marriage, adultery, affairs, strip clubs, escorts and prostitutes, things. And it also shows up in pornography. I wouldn't necessarily separate them into two different categories, because what it's doing is I'm seeking out sexual behavior, and it's, pornography is most often coupled with masturbation, to bring that dopamine hit to my brain. And what happens when I do that is I kind of get numb. I kind of get high, and I can't connect with you, and I can't, because I can't connect with myself.
Right, exactly.
So what I would say to her is that have a careful, nuanced conversation with your partner about what it means for you that they are doing this. Because that's what matters in the coupleship, right? That this, I don't know about other couples, but this does not feel right for me. And this is not what I want for our marriage. And I think this stuff is between you and I, and I really, it kind of hurts me that you're doing this, by yourself. And, so have that conversation. And if he is willing to change the behavior and you see a marked change in the behavior, then you can be comforted by that. Or if he doesn't, then you know that you have a bigger issue, or just go and see if he'll come with you to a marriage counseling session and you guys can have a safe, mediated conversation about these things.
Wow. Well, Matthew, you have provided so much information. Thank you so much for being on the show. If people are listening and they want to connect with you or hear about your treatment, can you let us know?
Yeah. Yes. So beginagaininstitute.com or boulderrecovery.com are the ways that you can get in touch with us and the treatment that we provide. So that have all of our resources are on those two websites. So Boulder is the city. So BOULDER and Begin Again Institute. Those are our two treatment programs, and we're really proud of both of them and the success that we've seen with.
Curious, if people listening outside of Colorado, how long are those treatment programs? If you go in person, and if do you guys have online treatment programs?
So we're in person, and it's a 2-week program, and we see people from all over the world, all over the country, and they come and stay with us for 2 weeks. And we're doing intensive trauma treatment and psychoeducation 8 to 10 hours a day for 2 weeks. And guys can make a lot of progress quickly if we can stay in the work for those 2 weeks. That is a little bit beyond what you can achieve in once a week kind of therapy, where you kind of get sucked back into your world and all of the crises of your world, and then show up again for another 50-minute session a week later. So some guys lose traction in their work, and they need deeper help, and we're here to help them with that.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show. Yes, I really do appreciate it. For our listeners who are out there, just to let you know what's coming up, on July 8th, we have Dr. John Meyer from Hodges University, Education in Intimacy for Non-Traditional Students. July 15th, we have the Homans Chronicles. They're talking about friendship and intimacy. July 29th, we have Jack Beach, Learning How to Love from the Heart. And on August 5th, we have Ashley Cobb, Sex Influencing and Education. So don't forget to follow us on Bringing Intimacy Back. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Also go onto our site. We also have a variety of products that if you're interested in utilizing or needing some more information about counseling, check us out. This has been the Bringing Intimacy Back show. Thank you guys, and I will see you guys next week.